Well, our focus for most of this hour is humanitarian aid to Iraq. We'll look at the state of hospitals and medical supplies where we can, and at the immediate and longer-term problems with electricity and water. And we'll compare the challenges of post-war Iraq with post-war Afghanistan. If you have questions about the humanitarian effort in Iraq, join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from Inverness, California, is Mark Bartolini. He's Director of Middle East Programs for the International Rescue Committee. He was just in Kuwait, and good of you to join us.
Thank you, Neil.
Where are IRC and other non-governmental agencies in Iraq? Well, they're not in Iraq right now, are they?
Well, we've been in, but only on short-term assessment missions. The situation now in Kuwait, you have numerous non-governmental organizations that are waiting to go in and start bringing relief supplies, doing assessments. But areas have been designated by the coalition as permissive and non-permissive.
And what is what's permissive, for example, right now?
Well, up to a few days ago, it was only areas south of Basra, around the Qusair area, but that's changing. And we expect to have a team going into Basra and Nasiriyah later this week on Wednesday or Thursday. And hopefully by next week, we expect to be starting operations in Baghdad.
Given I guess it's the military that decides what's permissive and what isn't, right?
Well, that's a question. I mean, from our perspective, it shouldn't be. We have our own security personnel that look at these issues, and we would certainly prefer to be able to make that determination on our own. But the reality is right now is that the military is controlling it.
Because they control the roads? You can't ship any materials without their permission?
That's correct. They control access, actually, across the border, and they have checkpoints along the routes that will stop you from entering non-permissive areas.
What are the biggest concerns for you right now in Iraq?
Well, first of all, I think you have to recognize that some of our biggest concerns didn't happen, which was large refugee flows, large numbers of internally displaced, perhaps the use of chemical or biological weapons, and a prolonged war. I mean, it's 3 weeks into it, and it looks like the war is winding down. So those are all positive signs on the humanitarian front. But clearly, security is a huge issue. Without getting a handle on security, we're just not going to be able to start addressing the real needs that do exist. And those really right now are around water and around health care. The hospitals, especially in Baghdad and some of the urban areas, are in desperate straits due to looting.
And obviously this is related to electricity as well.
That's correct, because the electricity provides the juice for the water plants. And we know from experience around the world and in places that we work that water is really critical to a population's health. Without clean water, we'll start seeing diseases that especially children under 5 are especially susceptible to.
Again, most of this hour, we're focusing on humanitarian issues and provisions to Iraq. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. The email address, totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Alice, who joins us from Monmouth Junction in New Jersey.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question and a comment. First of all, the war is pretty much over at this point, and many of the Arab nations, Syria as one of them, have been so anti-American and so anti this war. And now that we see that the Iraqi people need so much help, are the Arab nations going to be stepping up a little bit to help with the humanitarian needs?
Mike, obviously they're the closest.
Right, and certainly I think people are stepping up. Kuwait, Jordan, other countries have provided assistance. I think you will see a large outpouring of support to help the Iraqi people from throughout the region.
I did read of a Council of Foreign Ministers that is expected to meet in the Gulf later this week that is expected to discuss, among other things, humanitarian issues. Alice, did you have another point you wanted to make?
No. I mean, it's just good to hear because I was concerned that, there was just so much anti-American sentiment that, people really weren't stepping up in the region for the Iraqi people all these years. And now, finally, they have an opportunity to, and I was hoping that the answer was yes, in fact, they would get together and actually forget about the rhetoric and help each other out.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Mark, what are the big issues right now? I mean, one of the things that a lot of people are going to be concerned about is who coordinates what so efforts don't get duplicated and vital areas are not left unaddressed.
Well, some issues on coordination are still unclear and being worked out, but there has been quite a bit done, and there are ongoing meetings on a daily basis. for instance, center and southern Iraq have been divided into governance for particular agencies. Non-governmental agencies have been given lead agency status to work on food issues, health issues, internally displaced issues. The UN has an office or bureau, the UN OCHA, Office of Coordination of Humanitarian Assistance. They're working on coordinating the non-governmental organizations. We're the implementing partners of the UN. And on the U.S. side, they've established the Office of Reconstruction and Humanitarian Assistance, and we're also coordinating with them.
When you say you're the implementing partners of the UN, what does that mean?
Well, that means they provide the funding, and we actually are the ones that do the work. We hire the staff that gets the actual aid in, provides the resources to do the humanitarian assistance.
So you're the subcontractor, if you will.
Correct.
Okay, and your expertise is specifically of the International Rescue Committee?
Well, we work on a variety of sectors depending on the crisis. And in this crisis, we've identified water and sanitation as key, primary health care, and also child protection. Obviously, there have been a great deal of casualties in this war, and we know from our experience what that does to children. And we're hoping to be able to assist the Iraqis to help their children with these issues.
Obviously, both children directly affected and indirectly affected when their parents and siblings are injured or are suffering. We'll be back with more after a short break. We're talking about the state of humanitarian aid in Iraq. We're also taking your questions about it. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about how humanitarian efforts are coordinated in Iraq and what shape they are in right now. You're, of course, invited to join our discussion. If you have questions about humanitarian aid and how you can help, give us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Still with us from Inverness, California, is Mike Bartolini, Director of Middle East Programs for the International Rescue Committee. And Mark, I wanted to follow up. You said obviously water is a major issue right now. There are a couple of different ways to address that, either in the short term with crates of bottled water or tankers full of water, or in the longer term with engineers and parts for the pumping plants and that sort of thing. Which part of it are you involved in, or both?
Both. We're certainly looking at tankering in water where it's needed, and we're also looking at patching up systems. The systems are in disrepair due to years of sanctions. Fuel is another major issue to keep the generators running. So we'll be doing a bit of all of that. And I expect over the longer term, you'll see, because Iraq does have vast natural resources, you'll see a general reconstruction of these systems.
Again, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Let's go with Richard, who's joining us from Baltimore.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I'd like to ask Mr. Bartolini something that I've only read about one time in the New York Times, and I'm just ignorant and want to ask a question. I understand that the Defense Department is running the show now with regard to relief, but it's my understanding that the Defense Department has a new office and it wants Jay Garner to continue the effort coordinating NGOs and relief even after the shooting stopped. And it's also my understanding that Mr. Powell has been trying to keep things more traditional and let AID, which comes under the State Department, to continue to do an ununiformed effort. And I'm just ignorant. I wonder if you could talk about that.
Well, you're not so ignorant. That's an excellent summary of the situation. And it frankly hasn't been decided yet just how the reporting arrangements will go. As non-governmental organizations, I think we're extremely concerned about our operational independence. And we don't want to be seen as necessarily allied in any political objectives of any government. It's still unclear at this stage what kind of security situation we'll be facing over the long term in Iraq, and we want to maintain our independence and our impartiality. So this is an issue of grave concern. As I said, you've described it fairly accurately. but the final decision has not yet been made.
Would you describe the situation as confused? I mean, you just came back from Kuwait.
Well, I think there's some confusion over this issue, but I don't think that's confusing the larger relief effort. I think the NGOs are pretty much together working on what we want to work on in what sectors and where, with the UN, and to a degree with these USAID teams that are out there right now. We're coordinating well. But I think it's more a matter of optics and the fact that we don't want this close an association.
Richard, good question. Thanks very much.
May I ask one question to follow up?
Sure.
How can the ordinary citizen support relief organizations? Who do we need to talk to say, let's let the NGOs have their independence?
Well, this issue was tied into the supplemental funds that just came through Congress. So certainly both legislators and administration officials, I'm sure, would be interested in hearing citizens' views on this. We are the repository of largesse of church groups, of veterans groups. We're an effort, no matter what your political views are in this war, we are a way to make a positive impact in Iraq. So I do think it's a critical issue.
And thank you for what you're doing. Goodbye.
And Richard, thanks for the phone call. I just wanted to follow up with a quick email question from Tony, which really follows on from that more political discussion we were just having. What can an average American do to help an Iraqi, writes Tony?
Well, certainly resources are critical. And many in the general public, I think, have good-hearted efforts to put together canned food, clothing, and those kind of items, gifts in kind, we call them. The problem is that by the time we actually transport them to where they're needed and hire the manpower to distribute them, it's a self-defeating process. So it may sound cold, but really cash is the most important thing that you can do to help a relief organization. And we're easily found on the Internet in terms of how that can be done.
Okay. Let's stay with us, if you will. Joining us now from Amman, Jordan, is David Wimhurst. He's the spokesman with the United Nations humanitarian effort in Iraq. And good of you to speak with us again.
Good evening.
Things have progressed somewhat since we spoke last. Where is the UN with help for Iraq now?
Well, we're coming in from four sides, that is north, south, east, and west. From the north, we're bringing in food aid. Corridor from Turkey. We're in the process of shipping 6,000 tons of wheat flour to the northern provinces of Iraq. They've not had their rations for some time, and that's an urgent initiative. From the east, from Iran, there have been two entries, one today to look at the situation of internally displaced people who are in a town about 10 miles from inside Iraq, from the border from Iran, and we'll have an assessment on them. And then lower south, we've had a team go in from Médecins du Monde, which is a very well-recognized NGO carrying supplies into Basra in the south. And then from the direct south itself, from Kuwait, we have every day teams going in to Umm Qasr, the port, and then points north of the port to Zubayr and to Safwan, carrying out humanitarian assistance. And then from the west, in Jordan, where I am, we had last week a truck of 13 metric tons of medical equipment going into Baghdad, but the situation in the capital is so confusing that we've not yet really had a firm grip on where those supplies went, which shows how difficult it can be. But for the moment, the center, which is Baghdad and the city south of Baghdad, you know, because of the security conditions, and that's an issue of some importance to us.
How do you communicate with all of these different convoys moving around the country?
Well, we have a coordination system set up in Cyprus, in Larnaca, and all of the UN agencies and all of the partner NGOs that work with the UN humanitarian assistance effort coordinate information through them, and so then we get information from Larnaca to Jordan, and then we can transmit it to the media.
Now, earlier today here in Washington, Secretary of State Colin Powell said the situation with food seems to be reasonably good inside Iraq, and he mentioned the problems that everybody's been mentioning: power, water, and medicine. Is that right? Your impression as well?
No, I don't think he's wrong, but we do estimate that by the end of this month, the month of April, there will be food shortages in Iraq. And we have said since the beginning that we have to get food supplies in to Iraq by the end of April. And that's something that, you know, we're 2 weeks away from the end of April, and that's something that's a concern to us. But it's certainly true that medical, that water and electricity are key elements in restoring the infrastructure, restoring key support for the Iraqi people.
And security is, of course, necessary to supply all of that. You obviously can't supply water unless you can drive the truck to where it's needed.
It's not just driving it to where it's needed, it's being able to distribute it. I mean, just a few days ago, we had a water tanker going into Umm Qasr that withdrew because it was surrounded by an angry mob. To have on the ground people, experienced people, who know how to distribute humanitarian assistance, receiving all of this aid that's coming in, and then making sure it goes on its way to the communities, the families who really need it, or the institutions. Now, as long as we don't have the secure access to locate our people on the ground, it makes that whole humanitarian effort very, very difficult. And the example I just cited to you, 13 metric tons of medical equipment going to Baghdad, that's a lot of money, a lot of resources. We don't know yet where they ended up because of the confusing situation in Baghdad. We don't yet have the staff on the ground to receive this and distribute it.
And what is your major concern over the next few days, maybe the next week, as you look ahead?
Well, clearly medical supplies and equipment for the hospitals in Baghdad. I mean, out of 35 hospitals, apparently 33 have closed down. I mean, there are only two medical institutions currently running, according to the International Committee of the Red Cross. That's a dire situation for a capital that's inhabited by 5 million people. And don't forget, it's not just the war wounded that need treatment. It's the regular people who need, you know, their cancer treatments, dialysis, their diabetes treatments or whatever. They can't get it. And that's going to increase, unfortunately, very sadly, the death rate, we feel.
And, of course, many of those medicines have to be refrigerated as well. If the power's down, there's no possibility of doing any of that.
Exactly. I mean, insulin is one example. You know, it needs refrigeration, and if the electricity supplies aren't there, you can't do that. And if you don't have electricity, you can't supply fresh water. You can't pump the water. So without water, you get the problem of contagious diseases spreading, particularly among most vulnerable layers of the population, young children and young mothers who are nursing and pregnant mothers and so on. So these are critical elements, you know, electricity, water, and medical supplies.
David Wimhurst, thanks so much for being with us again.
Thank you.
David Wimhurst joined us on the phone from Amman, Jordan. He's with the International Committee for the Red Cross. And still with us on the line is Mark Bartolini of the International Rescue Committee, the IRC. And let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Michael, who's with us from Durham, North Carolina.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My wife and I have talked about trying to contribute to aid, the post-war, or I guess we're still during in the war, sort of, but the post-war effort for aid, and we've come to the conclusion we're not so comfortable with contributing goods or money, not really knowing where that ends up. And we've talked about possibly trying to get sabbaticals from our work so that we could go and give hands-on aid. The thing is, we don't know where to go, if that's actually a possibility, if that would be helpful. So that's kind of the direction of my question. Is there a place for people to go? How would we research this or find out where we would go to be able to actually go and help out in a hands-on manner, if that's possible?
And I'm sure all volunteers that need training, Mark Bartolini.
That's correct. And we do, as many agencies do, take volunteers. In this crisis, I can't say when that might start, because obviously we have continuing security concerns, and I think we'll just have our professional staff in for the near future. But you can look on our website, www.theirc.org, and it'll list volunteer opportunities. In terms of just walking in, I think that would be a difficult thing to do right now due to some of the reasons I mentioned earlier in terms of the control at the borders. But agencies will be looking for volunteers as time progresses. And in terms of concerns about where your resources might go, you can dictate on your check that you want it to go to Iraq and specify whatever it is that you'd like it to go to.
Okay. Go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I think it was more that we were hoping for a more tangible notion of what we were contributing, rather than, well, we've shipped off a check or you know, whatever canned goods, and hopefully that's getting to someone. But I thank you. And so generally the idea is hold off, and if we're going to attempt to volunteer, wait until later in the process.
Well, volunteer, or we actually are hiring people, as there are many agencies right now working in the region. And if you have specific technical skills that we're looking for, I would urge you again to check our websites and see what's available in terms of positions.
Okay, thank you.
Mike,
sure.
Thanks for the call, Michael.
Thanks.
We're talking about the humanitarian situation in Iraq with Mark Bartolini of the International Rescue Committee, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And now let's go to Sharon, who's with us from Lebanon, New Hampshire.
Hi, Neil. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, you're on the air.
I am. One of the things that I keep watching for in the news media, along with the statistics and all the information about numbers and knowing that there's no water facilities and electricity and all that, I think it's directly related. What do the Iraqi people ordinarily do with their dead? And are our coalition forces finding Iraqi dead, and how are they dealing with them? And is there a role there for our coalition forces to help with that? And, you know, we're not having any issues with, you know, diseases or anything like that.
Well, I think that is an important issue, and it's clear from security problems over the last several days that there have been bodies lying in the street. The temperatures are rising. It's getting warm right now. So disease is an issue. But there's also, I think, a deference to religious practices. And the reports that I just started receiving today is that there, especially around Baghdad, there has been an effort on the part of Iraqis to deal with their dead.
Obviously, the lack of refrigeration is another problem there, too.
Correct.
Yeah. Sharon, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's go with Najaf, and Najaf is on the line with us from San Diego, California.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, my name is Najaf, and I am an Iraqi, and I'm asking about who is going to be funding this wonderful humanitarian programs to Iraq. Is this coming from funds that Iraqi funds that have been frozen throughout the Saddam regime, or are these funds that are coming from international sources, or is it that the Iraqi people eventually would have to pay for these helps and humanitarian programs? We are hearing that there are a group of Jewish people that are asking for retribution and for the damage that they had received in Iraq, you know, for losses of their property during the 40s and the 50s, and they are coming with a number of, like, you know, $11 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, is that something that the Iraqi people have to also pay for now?
Well, I think that's probably a question for international courts at such time as such a case might be brought. And
yes,
obviously, even outside the claims made by many people for losses during the 1991 war. But in terms of who's paying for the humanitarian aid, Mark Bartolini, can you help us out?
Sure. Well, it's a complicated question because there are so many different sources of funding. The U.S. government is in the process now, has just passed a supplemental funding bill for some $2.2 billion, and that will cover humanitarian aid in Iraq, so that's the American taxpayer. You also have other donor governments who stepped forward with over $530 million worth of aid. I think there were 20 governments contributing. You have the United Nations, which has existing funds through the Oil for Food program, and they are hoping to implement another $2 billion of aid through those resources, although that issue hasn't been resolved. And then there are private individuals, foundations that donate to groups like ours. So it's really a fairly broad spectrum of resources that we're accessing right now.
Can you give us a few of the countries? I did read that Japan has apparently promised, I think, $100 million?
Right. I don't have a list of all the countries, Neil, but there are several countries who've come forward. I believe, again, it's 20.
Okay. Najaf, thanks.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Appreciate your phone call.
Thank you.
We're going to continue this conversation after a break and speak with an official from the International Committee of the Red Cross from Kuwait City when we return from the break. We also want more of your phone calls. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. What can you offer the people of Iraq, or what questions do you have about how humanitarian aid is organized and delivered and prioritized? Again, 800-989-8255, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about how humanitarian efforts are coordinated in Iraq and what shape they're in right now. Tomorrow, we'll talk about the future of Iraq's oil industry, reconstruction, costs, and the longer-term effect of Iraqi oil on OPEC and the world market. But if you'd like to get in on the conversation on humanitarian aid, our phone number is 800-989-8255. The email address, totn@npr.org. Our guest is Mark Bartolini, Director of Middle East Program for the International Rescue Committee. And joining us now from Kuwait City in Kuwait is Tamara Al-Rafai. She works for the International Committee of the Red Cross, and good of you to speak with us.
Yes, hi.
We have heard from others that hospitals and water are the major concerns right now, as opposed to food, for example. Is that your reading as well?
Absolutely. Based on what the teams of the International Committee of the Red Cross have been looking at over this past week, both in Baghdad and Basra in the south, this is exactly what our priorities are. And in fact, this is exactly what we've been working on since the beginning of the hostilities, and even before, actually.
Now, how do you evaluate the situation regarding hospitals in Iraq, if you can make any broad generalizations?
Well, it is very, very difficult. Out of the 9 main hospitals in Baghdad that we have visited over the past 2 days, most of them are not working anymore, either because they have been completely looted and destroyed or because they have closed their doors because of fear of being looted and destroyed. So we can say that out of the 5 million people in Baghdad, very, very few actually have access to medical treatment.
And also, obviously, the security situation is important in terms of people getting to and from work at these hospitals, among other things. And the water situation, we were talking with Mark Bartolini about that as well.
Yes, absolutely. One problem we're facing in the hospitals is not only that they were looted and destroyed, but also that the medical staff isn't able to come to work, either because they don't want to cross the city because of what's happening, or because if they leave their houses, then their houses are going to be looted. So this is adding to the problems in the hospitals. Now, the water stations is also another issue because the water treatment plants, a lot of them have also either been destroyed during the hostilities or they have been destroyed and looted afterwards in security incidents over the past 3 or 4 days. So this also needs a lot of work. I mean, we have seen some destructions even on the pipes that distribute the clean treated water from the pump to the different neighborhoods of Baghdad. I'm mostly focusing on Baghdad because this is where we're doing the work, but it's exactly the same in Basra. We're doing exactly the same type of work.
The ICRC is famously independent. We were hearing problems of other groups earlier not being able to get into Baghdad yet. Obviously, you're already there.
Yes, we never left there. We have reduced our teams during the first week of the hostilities, but we never left. We stayed throughout the conflict in 3 cities, in Erbil in the north, Baghdad, and Basra anyway. And right now we are starting to reinforce those teams with extra personnel and extra aid going in to be distributed.
And right now, as you look at the days and perhaps the next week ahead, probably not wise to go too far beyond that at the moment, what is the most immediate concern? What do you think should be done first?
It's exactly that. We're going to continue visiting the different hospitals and making sure that they have at least some clean water, and those hospitals that still have some medical staff should have some surgical and medical supplies to be able to face the people that need treatment. We're not only talking about people who were wounded over the past 3 weeks. We're also talking about people who have chronic diseases such as kidney failure or diabetes. I mean, those people need constant treatment, and they haven't had access to it. Along the same lines and in parallel, we'll be are working on the water treatment facilities, both in terms of the purification stations, I mean, the water treatment stations themselves, but also the sewage. We should not underestimate the amount of epidemics and illnesses that can come out of either drinking dirty water or not having a proper evacuation system in the city. So these are our two main concerns right now, hospitals and water treatment plants.
Tamara Al-Rafai, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
She's with the International Committee for the Red Cross and was speaking with us from Kuwait City. And Mark Bartolini, we have one email question for you before we wrap up, and wanted to thank you for your time as well. This a little bit off the beaten track, but Constance in Silver Spring, Maryland asked, does anyone know of any charities that specifically assist in the recovery of Iraqi cultural assets, such as the museum artifacts that were looted over the weekend? Of course, the physical needs of the population are most important, she adds, but the longer we wait to secure and recover Iraq's cultural and archaeological assets, the harder it's going to be. Someday the people of Iraq are going to want their treasures back.
Well, unfortunately, I don't know of a specific agency that deals with that, but I know that it is a concern that's been voiced in many corners, and I'm sure there are people looking at it, and I'm sure there'll be indigenous Iraqi organizations that organizations help to address that issue as soon as security permits.
And that, under UN terminology, would fall under UNESCO, correct?
Correct.
Okay, Mark Bartolini, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Mark Bartolini was on the phone with us from Inverness, California. He's the director of Middle East Programs for the International Rescue Committee.